Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Wheeler Centre and to the Key of C, a night of storytelling and song. My name is Michelle Bennett. I'm a broadcaster at Triple R FM, presenting Spoke on a Tuesday morning. I will be your host this evening. I'll be playing a very small part in this evening. First, I'd like to acknowledge that we're on the lands of the Kulin Nations. I want to pay my respects to their elders past and present, and to the elders and members of any other communities who join us here tonight. How sad it is that a nation built on an invasion imposed upon the country of others should be so ungenerous sometimes when it comes to people seeking new life from across the seas. But there is also celebration tonight, and we're here to enjoy not only the wonderful work from an extraordinary lineup who are all sitting at the front here, but also to celebrate the launch of the Key of C Journal. You may have seen copies of which are out the front, and also this follows on from the Key of C albums. Here I must mention the tireless and wonderful work of Romany Benjamin and Hugh Crosswaith, who are the Key of C and who are here this evening too, so we might give them a round of applause, I think. Copies of both the journal and the CD can be found at the back here tonight, and all the proceeds of the sales tonight will go to the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, and the wonderful centre, of course, who many of you might have heard of since opening its doors in 2001. The ASRC has become the lead provider of welfare, education and employment services for asylum seekers in Australia. This is the first journal from the Key of C, and it represents the efforts of an entire community, and it's based on a single premise: that Australia is a great country because of its cultural diversity. And I think that's probably despite what our governments, previous and current, would have us believe at the moment. But this journal brings together Australia's creative community to create essays, fiction, art, poetry and photography, all inspired and informed by the experiences of refugees in Australia. And as we know, that experience is becoming more and more difficult with a government intent on making race and heritage a wedge with which to drive communities apart, which is why it's so fantastic to see a packed audience here tonight at the Wheeler Centre for the wonderful work of Alice Pung, Oslo Davis, Zakia Baig, Danny Katz, Awaz, Haftu, Murtaza and the Tiger and Me, who will all be performing tonight. And to kick us off tonight, please welcome Zakia Baig. Zakia arrived in Australia in 2006 as an overseas student and was one among the thousands of Hazaras who left their homes to escape persecution in Pakistan and Afghanistan. A mother of two, Zakia is a human rights activist and executive director of Australian Hazara Women's Friendship Network. Please join me in welcoming Zakia to the stage.
Thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm feeling honoured standing here in front of you lovely people. Congratulations to everybody making this event possible and making everybody connected. It is the connection that can make everybody strong as a community. With your permission, I'm taking you to a journey with me to my homeland, which is Afghanistan, and then Pakistan for a while. The roads are rough. Please buckle up. Not smooth. So, it is the story of a mother and her heart. Sing, my little bird. You can sing beautiful songs. Sing again for us, for our land. For there to where we both belong. Sing. Sing when we had spring at our home, when we used to sing together from the dawn. Sing about our kettles, fields, and pastures. When the golden crops used to bring laughters. Oh, the witness, little bird, sing. Sing when the horses were toys for our kids, and our nights were Shabbarat and days were Eid, when we had muscular sons like horses and daughters like angels, so beautiful like the bright moon in the dark nights and flowers in autumn. But the days were not the same after, when the devils were unleashed forever. You were there, my beautiful bird, my only companion. You were there and we saw together, when our horses were cut to the ground and our cattle were slaughtered and our pastures were burned. Oh, my crying, sad little bird. You were there where our angels were prisoned, and our bright, beautiful moons were put off. You were there and we saw together. But today we need you to sing again. Sing the songs of hope and dreams for us, for our land. The songs of light, greenery, and air, the songs that could push out all dark and despair. Sing, my strong little bird. Sing again. You can sing beautiful songs, but you are quiet. You are quiet and no longer singing again. You look always towards the horizon, which is dark and thundery. What is in there? What is in there, my little bird, my hope, my tomorrow, my only companion? What is in there? Is it thundering to prepare for another storm? Oh, my little bird. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zakia. Our next guest, Osloe Davis, is an illustrator and cartoonist who has drawn for a number of publications worldwide, including the New York Times, The Age, Mianjin, and The Guardian, and also Triple R. Just recently did some T-shirts for us. Thank you, Osloe. Osloe will be taking us through the history of immigration in Australia in 5 minutes.
Hi. So I've got to get this started, so hang on. I think something will come on the screen. Sorry, it's a bit gratuitous. I'll just try to flick it. Okay, so yes, I'm going to give a very quick overview of immigration in Australia. As most of you know, I'm a historian, so... No, I'm not a historian. I'm not really qualified to give this history, but a few years ago I was given the fantastic gig of drawing a series of cartoons for Museum Victoria and their Immigration Museum. And they were doing an online thing of Australian history. So they basically gave me all the information for around about 20 decades of Australian history. And I did a cartoon. And here are a bunch of them. It's a bit hard to read some of the captions, so I'll read them as well. So I'm not sure if this clicker's going to work. Oh, okay. So let's get into it. So, pre-1830s, the Wathaurong people sheltered William Buckley, an escapee from a failed convict settlement in Sorrento. And they're saying, which one of you was William Buckley? And we forget. John Batman signs treaties with Aboriginal leaders from the Port Phillip area, and takes almost 250,000 hectares of land. At least can I get my pen back? Caroline Chisholm assists immigrant workers and families by establishing a family colonisation loan society, for which she was later commemorated on the Australian $5 note. If you need help, here's my card. Gold is discovered, attracting almost 500,000 immigrants in a decade. A £10 poll tax on Chinese immigrants is introduced in 1855, the first anti-Chinese legislation. Now remember, don't tell anyone about all this gold. In 1873, riots occur in Clunes in Western Victoria due to the use of Chinese miners to break a miners' strike. The violence forced the Chinese people to return to Ballarat. Well, at least when they say go home, they only mean Ballarat. Laws restricting Chinese immigration are reintroduced. By 1888, Chinese immigration is virtually banned. Chinese passengers are prevented from disembarking from boats in Melbourne and Sydney. You can't disembark, but we'd still love some of your dim sims. In 1903, Commonwealth Naturalisation Act excludes all non-Europeans from the right to apply for naturalisation or from bringing spouses and children into the country. And this one says, sorry, when we said we require you to speak English, we meant only English. In 1914, the Commonwealth War Precautions Act causes several thousand Australian residents of German and Australian origin to be interned as enemy aliens. In 1938, the government decides to accept 15,000 Jewish refugees from Nazism over 3 years. Only 7,500 reach Australia before war breaks out. No foreigners. At least racism's at an all-time low. Australia's sense of vulnerability during World War II leads to calls for Australia to populate or perish in the 1940s. No thanks, I'd prefer to perish. British immigration is still favoured, being promoted through community schemes such as Bring Out a Briton. And here it says, well, we could get some spaghetti bolognese from one of those new Italian places or head back to my mum's for some bangers and mash. In the 1965, the Labor Party's long-standing commitment to the White Australia policy is removed from its party platform. It'll take years to get rid of this. In the 1970s, the first refugees arrived from Vietnam, Lebanon, Cyprus and Chile, fleeing civil war and political conflict. This reminds me of when I was a kid. In the 1980s, amendments to the Migration Act replaced the term alien with non-citizen and end the favoured treatment of British nationals. First significant numbers of African refugees arrive, mostly from Ethiopia. And the city starts to change. And lastly, this is all we got up to in the 2000s. Nationwide rallies are held protesting against the treatment of asylum seekers being held in Australia and offshore detention centres. And the caption for this last one is, relax, they're just trying to make us feel at home. Thanks.
I think those protests do still continue today up to 2014. Thank you for that, Oslo Davis. Coming up next, please join me in welcoming Awaz. Awaz is a Kurdish musician from the Middle East. He plays traditional Kurdish music on the baglama and the kaval. I hope I've said that correctly. Awaz came to Australia in early 2012 and was a member of the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre. He composed and performed with Sophia Bruce on the Key of C Volume 2 album, and his performance on that record is the first time he has been at liberty to sing in his original tongue. Please welcome Awaz.
Thank you.
next guest is Alice Pung. She is the best-selling author of Her Father's Daughter, which won the 2012 Western Australian Premier's Literary Award, and Unpolished Gem, which won the 2007 Australian Book Industry Newcomer of the Year Award, and is also published in the UK, Germany, Indonesia and the US. She is also the editor of Growing Up Asian in Australia. You'll find Alice's work, along with a lot of other people's here, in the journal this evening. Thanks to Alice.
Hi everyone. So I'm not going to read anything tonight because I don't have a good reading voice, but I'm going to tell you a story. So I grew up in a neighbourhood called Braybrook, and some of you might come from the western suburbs. You might know where that is. I was born in Footscray but grew up in Braybrook, and Braybrook is a very interesting place. It's a place where you have these concrete houses and there are at least four cars in every driveway, but only one of them is working at any given time. And the people of Braybrook are quite accomplished. They work in banking and advertising. That is, their mums clean banks and their brothers put Safeway pamphlets in letterboxes. And so growing up in Braybrook was very interesting in the 1980s. So my parents came here in 1980 and I was born shortly afterwards. In fact, my mum likes to tell people that she smuggled me into this country because she was 8 months pregnant and she lied. She said she was only about 5 months to get me on the plane. And so we grew up in Braybrook, and at that time it was divided into two different groups of people. You had people who you're all familiar with called the Bogans, but then there were us. We were the Bogasians, like a notch below the Bogans. We were the Bogan Asians. And my mother, when she came here, because our family originated from Cambodia, and the reason I don't read tonight is because I write about the Cambodian Holocaust, where most of my family died. So my mother and my dad got very busy and made four of us to replace, you know, so many family members they lost. I would be responsible for looking after my younger brothers and sisters. And on very hot days, because we live behind the carpet factory, the fumes would all come up and pollute the whole neighbourhood. And you smelt like sulphur. You smelt like rotten eggs. So my mum would tell me to take my sisters to High Point Shopping Centre. So one of them was walking. One of them was in a pram. And I'd go to High Point Shopping Centre. I'd feel like a single mum because I was about 15 years old then. And so I'd have these sisters with me. I remember this incident. One day, there was a carousel, sort of like what Oslo illustrated in his cartoon before, but it had Postman Pat and his black and white cat on one of them. It had like his mail van where you could put little kids. Now, my mother would never let us waste money on the carousel to make it move, but luckily for my sisters, they thought that was the ride. So I put my sisters on the ride. I had no idea on the other side there was another kid until this dinner plate version of the little kid's face appeared. It was her mother, and she said, "Oi, get lost. We were here first." And then she glared at me. She goes, "Have you got a dollar? Because we're not putting in a dollar for yous too." And so, I took my little sister off the carousel. She started to cry and we walked away and I gave her some free entertainment at Toys R Us. But growing up, yeah, these days you would blog about things like that. And you had, you know, 1,001 small and large incidents like that. But if you look at it from the other perspective, because Christos Tolkis, the writer who I much admire, wrote a piece in the monthly magazine examining why we hate refugees so much. And he said, look, people make fun of Bogans because they're uneducated and they seem to only care about themselves and they only want to have selfish material gains and build McMansions. But he said, these are the people whose kids are going to school with refugees' kids. These are the people who live right next door to them. So we need to have a more nuanced view at them. And all they saw of us growing up, because both my parents were out workers at the start, and then my dad started a little retrovision store, which became eventually a bit bigger. But when my parents were out workers in the back shed, all you saw of them was not very often at all, so the neighbours wouldn't know if they were home or not. And then 10 years later, instead of having four broken cars in the front yard, you'd get this one big brand new car, you know, a good Toyota Camry. And the people of Braybrook would think, what's the government doing with these migrants? You know, they keep to themselves, they form ghettos and don't assimilate, according to the words of a lady who was on Dancing with the Stars. And and they think, how did they get these cars? Something shonky is going on. And then when I went to university, that changed my life because everyone was so nice. And I'll finish off by telling a story about my dad. My first boyfriend came from Clunes near Ballarat, and he really wanted to meet my parents. But as a young student, I really didn't want him to meet my parents. I was kind of ashamed of coming from Braybrook when at university people were the furthest thing from racist you could get. They were interested in your culture. They were interested in your background. So I pretended I was like an international student or someone who had an interesting background. So anyhow, Damien kept bugging me to meet my parents. I kept saying no. And one day he said, you're just ashamed of me because I come from Clunes and you think I grew up with some sheep. And I said, no, it's not that at all. So eventually I relented and he came home to meet my parents. And my mum had cooked this massive feast where 7 different kinds of animals had been sacrificed. And it turns out the boy was vegetarian. So, and then my dad took a liking to him because my dad put a plate of fish in front of him and said, Damien, have a go, dig in. So Damien started to eat with chopsticks and he was eating meat because he wanted to please my parents. And my dad said something a bit racist, which he meant with the best of intentions, so it works both ways. My dad said, whoa, Damien, look at you go with those chopsticks. What a pro. And I said, Dad, he's not like mentally... anyone can use chopsticks. And my dad said, but he's from the countryside. And I was so embarrassed. But then my dad said, Damien, do you want to hear a funny story? And I said, Dad, your story's not funny. Damien doesn't want to hear your funny stories because my dad's stories revolve around 2 things. So when he was surviving the killing fields, he had 2 jobs. During the wet season, it was to bury the dead. So you have to pull them out of the floodwaters and bury them. During the dry season, it was to make fertilizer out of human poo. So the story could either be about dead bodies or poo. And I said, Dad, your stories aren't funny. Damien doesn't want to hear them. And Damien was nodding at my dad really encouragingly. So my dad said, oh, Damien, when we're surviving the killing fields, me and my mate, we're skin and bones. You know, if we breathed in, you could feel our backbone through our stomachs. If we turned around sideways, we'd disappear from view. That's how thin we were. And we had this blanket between us. And we'd grab these dead bodies and plonk them on the blanket. And they're all puffed up because they'd been, you know, in the floodwaters for so long. And we'd pull the blanket and hoist it on our shoulders. And it was like a swimming hammock. And we walked uphill to bury these bodies. And every time we walked uphill, of course, we tripped over a couple of times because we're weak and malnourished. But every time we tripped over, terrible thing would happen. That body would fall back into the water. The blanket would become even more wet. And then we'd have to drag this body back on the blanket. And one day my mate just sits down in the middle of the water, comes up to his waist, and he goes, Kwan, I don't want to do this anymore. And my dad said, come on, mate, we'll just pull him out. This, you know, give this guy a decent burial. And my dad's mate said to him, man, you'd better not be this heavy when it's my turn to drag you out. And my dad said, don't worry, mate, you're going to be the one in the blanket. I'll make sure you get a decent burial. Just don't die with your mouth open, okay, because you'll puff up. And so my dad turned to Damien and said, oh, you know, they puff up like cane toads, these dead bodies. They're like 3 times the size of the living. Isn't that hilarious? And all the blood had drained out of Damien's face and he'd completely stopped eating. And I said, Dad, that's enough, because my dad had broken my facade of being this sophisticated, you know, university student. And here I was, you know, from this refugee background, which Damien kind of knew, but I never told stories about that. And I said, Dad, that's enough. And I looked at my boyfriend and he gave me a look. It was a very bad look. And I thought, why is he giving me the hairy eyeball? And then I saw him look at my dad. And it was a look I had never given my own father before. It was a look of absolute awe and respect that a man like this could be eating and, you know, telling jokes and singing and you know, being a really funny guy. And when I saw Damien look at my dad in that way, It was the first time in my life that I saw my dad just not as my embarrassing father, but as a man in his own right, a man who had his own dreams and expectations and fears and anxieties, who survived great odds. And the real miracle wasn't that he survived the killing fields. The real miracle was that he survived and he could love us so purely by making everything into something annoying and funny instead of something traumatic in our lives. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Alice Pung. I think everyone needs a kwan on the first date, don't they, to take along. Our next guest is Haftu. He is a musician from Ethiopia and he's been playing traditional Ethiopian music for 8 years. He plays the masiko and the kora. Tonight he will be playing the kora and performing a piece of gratitude to the Australian people for welcoming asylum seekers and refugees. He celebrates the beauty of Australia's multiculturalism. Big thank you to Haftu there. Our next guest is Danny Katz. Danny Katz, Canadian-born, came to Australia at a young age after failed careers as a musician, stand-up comedian and car washer. He finally turned to writing and became a newspaper columnist for The Age, The Sydney Morning Herald and The Western Australian. Thankfully, I don't think Danny's going to be washing cars for us this evening, but he will be telling us a story. We might all line up out the back later on.
I kind of want to do my musical act now, if you don't mind. I'm going to sing some selections from West Side Story. Or something from my traditional Kannadistani background. Oh, I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I work on... Okay. Here we are. Let me just read you a little piece. I've only got 5 minutes. I'll read you a little piece from the book, The Key of C. It's called Boat People. It's by me. Gee, this print is really small. How am I going to read this? Can you hold that? The boat people came from far away. We could see them on the horizon, heading towards our shoreline with their bags and tents and dreams of a better future for their children. And they dragged their ramshackle boat behind them, a massive rubber pink elephant kiddie raft with an inflatable curly-whirly trunk. They appeared to be a family, 2 parents and 4 kids, and they'd come from a distant place called the car park. And we're making the long, treacherous journey across the hot sand towards our fair land. But this was our spot. We'd settled here more than an hour ago and built a very comfortable life for ourselves on Elwood Beach. It was peaceful and wind-free and had stunning views across the bay, from the Altona smokestacks way off in the distance to the jet skiers skimming across the waves, colliding with kite surfers. We didn't want a family coming in with their ugly beach gear and noisy bustle, blocking out our sunlight with their hideously oversized Thomas the Tank Engine beach umbrella. Sure, we could understand why they'd want to settle on our section of sweeping sunburned shore. It was the best bit of the beach. The washed-up seaweed was fermenting fragrantly in the sun. The water was delightfully soupy, with a minimum of razor-edged rocks lurking below the gray depths. And there was a picturesque plague of jellyfish floating on the water's surface, looking like triple-D-sized silicone implants after a massive offshore fake boob explosion. All these riches had enticed the boat people, wooed them with the promise of a better, happier life. But as a local, I was worried. I turned to my beloved and said, "Oh, great. They're going to plonk themselves down right in front of us." And she said, "So what? There's plenty of room for everyone." And I said, "But they're going to spoil our view and wreck the whole day. I'm not going to let them sit here." And I immediately leapt into Coast Guard mode, laying out all our beach bags and beach footwear into a big row to intercept them before they entered our territory. Then I closed access to our land by stretching out my enormous pool towel, which was about the size of a pool. No way could they get past this high security border crossing. And as a final visual deterrent, I surrounded our area with dead jellyfish, mangled ones that seagulls had pecked big chunks out of. And it seemed to work. The boat people came up to the border, then stopped at my pair of blue Havaianas. They looked over at us longingly. I looked back at them threateningly. Then a stressful impasse began. they were forced to set up temporarily on a tiny outcrop of stinky seaweed just meters away in the full force of the beach wind. They sat there for ages with their pink elephant kitty raft, occasionally glancing our way, wishing they could enter our beautiful, windless, lucky little paradise. But my beloved, bleeding heart lefty do-gooder that she is, couldn't take it anymore. She said to me, "Come on, this is ridiculous. I'm letting them sit near us." And I said, "Don't do it. If we open the towel doors for them, we'll open it for everyone." But she stood up, dragged the towel away, pushed aside my blue Havaianas, and called out to them, "Excuse me, you're welcome to join us here if you like." And they said, "Thanks," and came in with their kids and bags and a disgustingly daggy old Esky on wheels. I mean, really, this was going to have a huge effect on property values in the neighborhood. But, you know, it wasn't so bad in the end. Sure, it took them a while to learn the local customs and etiquette. I had to tell them to stop flicking sand in my face when they were filling the little beach tent sand pockets that stopped the tent from blowing away. But after that, we actually all managed to get along okay, and we spent the rest of the Arvo being content and lazy together, enjoying the views and the sunlight and living off the fat of the land. Or in their case, the fat of their esky, which was stuffed with cola drinks, schnitzel sandwiches, and about 12 packets of tangy nacho cheese corn chips. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I think I'm going handheld for this next bit because we've got so many people coming up on stage at the moment. A big thank you to Danny Katz, of course. I think maybe we should get some politicians down to the beach with you one day. Danny can teach them a few things. For the final act this evening, we're going to be joined by Murtaza, who will be joined by The Tiger and Me. Murtaza came to Australia from Afghanistan some years ago. He came to escape the Taliban and sought asylum under the Refugee Convention, and he was eventually given that protection, and he began a new life here. And he is going to be accompanied by The Tiger and Me, which tonight is Jane Hendry, Aid Vincent, Jeremy Kirk, Tobias Selkirk, and Tristan Courtney. I'm wondering whether everyone is coming on up here. While we get all of that together, I do want to just reiterate the Key of C Journal, this wonderful book that I have in my hand, and the CD can all be purchased tonight from the back here, and all proceeds go to the wonderful Asylum Seeker Resource Centre. Because this is going to take a little bit of time, I wanted to just read one of the pieces that is in this book. It was much easier at the lectern. This is from First Dog on the Moon, who is a wonderful philosopher. One of his cartoons appears in the journal, a piece that unfortunately has as much resonance today as it did when it was drawn back in 2011. But I'm just going to read the words from it for you tonight. It's titled "Let Them All Come" by First Dog on the Moon. "Let them all come. Let them all come and ruin our way of life. Let them overrun our greed and our sorrow. Let them fill our streets with their undrowned children and trample our tenuous, grasping spirits with their tired, dusty feet. Terrible, dusty feet that have been who knows where. Let them. Let them bring their strange ways and their bad ideas. We'll be right. We'll smash the people smugglers' business model, smash it to pieces. Then let us. Smash the grim trade in deceit and dull stupidity, the traffic in fear and lies. Topple the coalition of the willing fools. End the world's best practice, throwing children to the wolves. Bring down the market of smoke and mirrors. Burn it down. Burn it all to dust. Raise it to the ground. Then salt the earth to the end of the world. Smash it all. Let them all come. That's a beautiful piece that's by First Dog and the Moon, drawn back in 2011. You'll find that in the Key of C journal tonight. And I think we might just do a little bit of a thank you to Hugh and Romani, who are here from the Key of C again. Thank you so much for allowing the Wheeler Centre to put on this event for your wonderful organisation. And now I think we're just about ready for The Tiger and Me and Murtaza. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having us here. It's a pleasure to be joining Murtaza again and playing for you. The song that we wrote together with Murtaza for the Key of C Volume 2, it is called Az Eshk To. Is that right?
Correct, yeah,
yes, right. I remembered how to pronounce it.
When the heart swells, the breeze comes to tell that your life can't go on without your love beside you.
ای بهتر از گنج و گوهر ویرانم ویرانم ای بهتر از گنج و گوهر ویرانم ویرانم You